healthcare is part of the critical infrastructure of the United States, and that's another piece that I think a lot of people miss. You got nothing to say about that, really. I gave you a great pause, and this is what you do to me. You just leave me hanging. There I am, clinging to the
following along.
I'm
in agreement. I'm nodding my head. Do you hear me? Did you not hear me nod my head?
I heard it rattle.
You're listening to the Help Me with HIPAA podcast, where HIPAA and humor collide to make learning fun. Your delightful hosts are Donna Grindle and David Sims. Relax. HIPAA help is on the way.
Welcome to the Help Me with HIPAA podcast. My name is David Sims from HIPAA for MSPs, and joining me is my co-host Donna Grindle of Cardin Compliance. Good morning, Donna.
Good morning to you, David.
Oh, I'm exhausted. Just came back from a conference, an IT conference, had nothing to do with healthcare, but we did talk a little bit about HIPAA from time to time. As you can imagine, IT is similar to healthcare in that some people care about it and others want to look the other way.
That's right.
But it was good stuff. So, but what have you been up to this week? You got any more conferences you've been to?
Oh, no, I've been on vacation.
Oh, that's right. That's
I was
right.
By the beach, my annual hideaway in Sanibel Island, where I just turn off. I can't disconnect. I'm too much of a nerd for that, but I used it for like reading and that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Every so often I send you something just to see if you'd reply.
Yeah. I did from time to time. I had limited access to my email, and it was limited by me. But it was good. That's good. We did get work done, and, you know, had a beautiful week on the island and really just went nowhere and did nothing, just hung out at the condo because you look out the window and there's the beach, and walk down the stairs and there's the beach. So
yeah, that's the best vacations anywhere. I've always hated the ones where it's like you get back and you're like exhausted and you need another couple of days of actual relaxing.
Yeah, well, at this point, I feel like I'm too relaxed and I'm not ready. I'm not just like super tense and ready to hit my week. The reentry burns are going to be painful, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah. Well, we'll get you warmed up today.
Oh, thank you, David.
Because we're going to go through the GAO report.
I know. Overwhelming excitement, but somebody's got to do it, David. We're going to keep other people from reading crap just like we always do.
Yeah. Yeah. Because, I mean, you know, there's only so much bathroom reading you can do.
It's a 43. It's a 43 page report. I read it. I know. I was going through it on the plane at least.
So. Yeah. There's not a whole lot you can do there anyway.
Yeah, I know. Kind of trapped and, you know, babies screaming and people chit-chatting nonstop. Put my earphones in, play my music, do my notes for today. So we're ready to roll, brother.
All right, cool. So let's talk about this report that happened a few weeks ago, but it just recently came out to the public. And as always, we figured out that they've been listening to the podcast and included some of our recommendations in the report.
Yes, indeed. You know, they just need to listen to us more. There's your request again for we'll take anybody from OCR that wants to chat with us. Please let us know. Yeah. Our people will call your people. Wait, our people is me and David. And
which
Bo,
ends up being
Bo,
you.
Yeah, which ends up being me. I'll have to see.
Yeah, you're the hardest working person in showbiz.
You're witty. Okay, so this report is related to, we actually talked about what prompted this report back in episode 31.
Wow, that's a long time ago.
Yeah. Well, when you know, our numbers are sometimes harrowing. You know, we're in our 70-something episode. We need to plan a big to do for our 100th episode.
Our 1,000th? Yeah, we'll do that too.
Our 1,000th. I'm too old for that one already. So this report was prompted by Lamar Alexander and Patty Murray, which are the chairman of the House, the Senate Committee on, what do they call it? Committee on Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions in the U.S. Senate. I know. Mm-hmm. Really? I know.
What's the acronym for that one?
I don't know. Blah, 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 blah. So, at any rate, the whole thing was in response to the senators sending a question over And you know, a question usually turns into a report for any, well, that happens in any organization, even not government. I was going to say government, but you know what happens in any big enterprise.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we ask a question, we have to go answer it ourselves.
Right.
This leads somebody else to doing it. And but they wrote a letter to HHS that was published back then. And it said, in that episode, we were talking about how we knew that enforcement efforts of OCR were going to be increasing in 2016. That mm-hmm. episode was at the end of 2015. And they had sent this letter asking what CMS and HHS is doing to monitor medical identity fraud, what CMS and or OCR doing, if anything, to track cases of identity theft and fraud. OCR uses a data collector from covered entities to monitor potential breach victims and find out if their data is in fact being used by criminals. And they also want to know whether any education materials or help are offered to breach victims by CMS and OCR.
Okay.
So they're basically saying,
what you doing?
Yeah, what you doing? You know, what's up with this? You know, we hear about this every day. And they did present their report to the committee August 6th. And then there's always a comment period after that before it's made public. So it was just made public September 26th. So this is new news, David.
I know. It's new news. Hot off the press.
That's right. It was done by the United States Government Accountability Office. A lot of people
government
see
accountability.
Yeah. GAO.
That's an oxymoron.
It says it follows all kinds of standards and it's a performance audit, which was, you know, kind of their thing. And so they said, you know, we're asked to review the current health information cybersecurity infrastructure, and they define their objectives based on, you know, the conversations that started after that letter and responses back and forth. The objectives of this whole report and this performance audit was to describe the expected benefits of and cyber threats to electronic health information, determine the extent to which HHS security privacy guidance for EHRs are consistent with federal cybersecurity guidance, and and assess the extent to which HHS oversees these requirements. So basically, is it really beneficial, considering the threats, to have electronic health records? And then what kind of guidance and help is HHS providing and managing under the security? And how well are they doing watching after it? So I'm sure HHS was happy this audit was going on.
So even they get audited.
I know. They get audited by the auditors who audit auditors. Woo! So they did do this audit. So it went from June 2015 to August 2016. So, I mean, it was June to July. You know, so that's kind of like the, you know, fiscal year almost. You know, using all the formal standards that audit people use. And, you know, you can go read their objectives, scope, and methodology in greater detail if you would like. I skipped that part. But there are other parts that I thought were quite interesting. And in their objective of going through, of course, they realized that the value of EHRs in healthcare is immense. It's such a fragmented structure organization that, you know, the industry has spread so wide, they have to be able to share this data electronically or it's just never going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
So they were at that. But one of the points that they really emphasized in their analysis, and this is something we've also talked about when we talked about how the new cybersecurity framework came out, and we talked about that maybe 2 years ago, but it was announced by the National Institute for Standards and Technology, and it was designed to define cybersecurity framework. And by framework, it's like the rules for U.S. critical infrastructure. And a lot of times people don't think about healthcare as the critical infrastructure, but it is. It includes critical infrastructure, has 16 sectors, One of those is healthcare and public policy. And it takes the concern that, you know, if we were in a crisis and we couldn't provide healthcare, well, you know what happens. And a crisis could be attacks, weapons, and the good Lord, some of the ideas these crazy terrorists and people come up with, you know, dirty bombs and all this kind of stuff. Healthcare has to be functional, and these crazy super viruses and all of that kind of stuff.
So, zombie apocalypse.
Yeah, there it is, the zombie apocalypse. You know, they film The Walking Dead down here in the Atlanta area, and it's hugely popular, but for some reason I just can't get into it. So I don't know why. I guess I read too much of this crazy crap. So
if you watch some of the, I know we're getting off on a side note, but if you watch some of the movies about that though,
yeah,
not The Walking Dead, but just some of the zombie movies like World War Z and stuff, it actually all starts from a healthcare problem.
You're right. Some of those worst ones.
Definitely a HIPAA breach of the ultimate kind.
There you go. See, so a lot of things happen. But, you know, financial services, communication, information technology, those all go into critical infrastructure. So they're trying to say, look, this stuff is under attack and we could collapse if we don't protect this stuff. And clearly, based on all the other stuff we talk about, we're not protecting it. So the cybersecurity framework is out there, and it's going through its first iteration of comments and changes, and it may have major changes. But we have already talked multiple times about the need to merge those together and how, as the next year comes in, I plan on trying to push a little bit more of that in with the HIPAA stuff and say, you know, this is going above and beyond HIPAA. Now, mm-hmm. That's what their point was. Mm-hmm. Is the CSF is above and beyond HIPAA.
Right.
So, but that was one key point, is that healthcare is part of the critical infrastructure of the United States, and that's another piece that I think a lot of people miss. You got nothing to say about that, really? I gave you a great pause, and this is what you do to me. You just leave me hanging. There I am, clinging to the...
I'm following along. I'm in agreement. I'm nodding my head. Do you hear me? Did you not hear me nod my head?
I heard it rattle. So the critical infrastructure designation is part of what makes it important that we are following cybersecurity, whether it's HIPAA or not, we should be following is what I guess I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
And by being concerned about that, that same framework is what I've used with other industries who are, you know, interested in building the cybersecurity programs that are formal. It freaks them out, but it's a formal cybersecurity program. And if you are not thinking that big, and that's what we hear all the time. I'm so small, they don't want me. Mm-hmm. Oh my God. It just is like, you're the way they get to everybody else.
Right. You're the weakest link.
You are. You're the weakest link in the chain. And for you to think that, and the number of people that think their home computer is no big deal, I don't care if they get to it. Yeah, you know what? They're using it to attack the rest of us. Mm-hmm. So you really have to think of a bigger picture when you are talking about technology in today's world, and healthcare being part of the critical infrastructure. They made it clear in this report that it is, and that it while our electronic information, they even say, here's the quote, it can offer substantial benefits but faces a variety of security and privacy threats. Mm-hmm. And so they make that point, and the list of incidents they used as examples, it's just like, you know, the horror stories that we go through all the time.
Right.
And we were just talking, it's time for our horror stories episode.
I know.
You get excited about that more than anything. I have to figure out how we're going to do it.
I just like, because our editor, Bo, he just comes up with some just great sound effects for it.
I know. I love those. So they were looking at the number of healthcare records compromised in 2015 due to hacking or other incidents, quote unquote, other incidents. Reference our most very recent episode on insider threats. So the when I saw this number, I was like, wow, I didn't really think about it that way. But in 2015, based on this data, over 113 million individual healthcare records were compromised.
Wow.
Bang.
That's a few people.
Well, basically, there's numbers that say over half of the U.S. population has had their healthcare information compromised. And when you look at that, now, granted, I'm sure there's plenty of people, unfortunately for them, that have been compromised in multiple ones. So getting a complete record for them is becoming easier and easier.
Right.
You know, let me go match up this person. I want to become them. Or, hey, they've got great healthcare coverage. Let me take theirs. But it goes through, you know, the Anthem and Blue Cross Blue Shield, community health systems, all of the big name breaches that were in like 2015, 2014. And they really go through and talk about that is in, what is it? A study conducted, Manadia, I can't pronounce it. You can look it up. Manadiant reported healthcare IT breaches, which had previously been a minor portion of their investigations, emerged in 2014 as a notable target for criminals. And then KPMG did the same survey that healthcare organizations are frequently targeted compared to other types. So they're saying it is just not a good idea out there to go swimming without your trunks on.
Right.
And the fact that it also talks about that the magnitude of the threat against healthcare information has grown exponentially.
Right. It's probably the highest growing one, I would say. I know the financial sector still gets hammered a good bit, but
they've locked theirs down a lot more.
Yeah, I was going to say they're probably 10 years ahead of healthcare in addressing these issues.
Oh, yeah, at least 10. And at the rate that the technology changes, it makes them further behind. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Right.
So, but then they pointed out, as I mentioned before, health IT systems face significant threats from insiders.
Yep.
So the attacks are much broader because in the financial sector, a lot of that stuff, let's change that because the Wells Fargo madness, never mind. but again, it's insiders, but not just insiders doing less than ethical things with the data. But it's the ones who fall victim to the phishing attacks or the social engineering. They're the ones that accidentally let you in. And this report says what we've been saying all along. It's the people.
Yeah. And we're seeing, on the IT side, we're seeing a huge rise in that. And as a matter of fact, the conference I was in this past week, they're talking now about malvertising, which is something we haven't discussed on the show. So maybe we'll do an episode about that. But basically, it's starting to get now to where the malware and ransomware and all that is being installed just by visiting a page that has advertising on it. And some of these aren't pages that are obscure. Some of them are like MSN and Newsweek and some of these other pages that are having malicious advertising put on the site, and it's loading automatically on people's computers just because you visited that page.
Mm-hmm. Scary stuff. Yeah. And our malware prevention software hasn't caught up with that.
Mm-mm. No, they're coming out with some things that are doing that, or certain companies are, like Malwarebytes, and there's some other high level companies that are. But most of these ones that people are using, and you know as well as I do, a lot of times, especially the smaller organizations, they tend to use what they use at home. Or they tend to use the free versions of stuff.
Yeah. That don't do it all.
Right. And this is not a virus in a typical sense that an antivirus software in and of itself is not going to catch it. It's not going to see it.
Right. It doesn't meet those previous requirements.
Right.
Yeah. And everybody thinks, well, why didn't it stop it? Why didn't it stop it? Because it's new.
Mm-hmm.
It has morphed. It's morphed. We had super antibiotics, and we've used them against it over and over and over, and now it's morphed into the new one. I mean, that's how these super bacteria come into play, and it's exactly what's happening with the diseases your computer gets.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's getting more where it's not signature-based anymore, that it's behavioral.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're having to try to figure out ways to look at the behavior of things that's going on and not actually the file itself and the signatures and, you know, the code and all that. It's looking at how it behaves. So well, it's very complicated.
Also why the websites themselves have a hard time figuring out that's what's going on. You know, they sold the ad. They have the code that runs in the block. And they themselves are going to have to tighten up. But it's new stuff. It takes time.
Yep.
So they did have a really cool chart. And we'll put that little table in the on the website. But they listed all of the adverse impacts and then where that threat source is and then gave a little description of it. And, of course, these are, again, all things that we've covered repeatedly except for the last one, which we really don't talk about that much. But the adverse impact, let's start with identity theft. Okay, well, the threat source is criminal organizations. We know that. We've talked about that repeatedly. And that, you know, they talk about how it's monetary gain. It's easy, and it makes it easier to engage in identity theft when you have all of the healthcare information. Then you got insurance fraud. Well, we talked about that too. They can just generate bills in your name if they want to, if they're so set up. And a lot of these companies can set themselves up as if they're actually a healthcare provider and then just send in a bunch of bills in your name as if you're being seen by them and you don't even know where they are.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, loss of personal privacy, embarrassment, or blackmail. And this could be from a criminal organization or an insider. And health information is used to extort money or create harm. You know, and we talked about it. The Team No Hose, we get to laugh about that, but it was horrible for that woman, what they did to her. And they, you know, get the, you know, while they may be just curious, they get the information on celebrities and stuff like that. Then you've got disruption of healthcare services. They may have a reason to prevent an entire hospital from being able to do something so that that one person they're targeting can't get the care they need.
Mm-hmm.
Or that one person they're targeting gets the care while others don't. You know, who knows? But we've talked about how that disruption and inability to care for others and how big that one is. And then national security impacts. And I know a lot of people are like, I don't even why you make me my little bitty office here have to worry about what would happen if the Secretary of State were here. Well, you know what? If you don't worry about it and they show up, you'll be mad because I didn't have you worry about it. That's all I'm saying. But it was good that they listed out all of those different things. And they also pointed out that HHS security and privacy guidance does not fully address important controls outlined in federal guidance. Hey, hey, CSF.
Yep.
Until these entities address all the elements of the NIST cybersecurity framework, their EHR systems and data are likely to remain unnecessarily exposed to security threats.
Yeah, keyword there, unnecessarily.
Yeah. And then we keep going another, yes, they do have the guidance and they are trying to do it. They say, you know, they tell them to do a risk analysis, but people don't even know how to do it. They give them a tool, but people still don't understand it. And they keep trying, but it's this stuff is so complicated, you know. So they are pointing out that they're trying. They're just not, you know, they're not able to get it across because people don't understand it. And they point out that covered entities and business associates have been challenged to comply with it, meaning they are, you know, not doing so well.
Yeah.
Based on the investigations and the audits and stuff, they said that investigations where corrective actions were required show that approximately 24% of complaints and breach reports result in investigations that involve questions about how organizations have conducted their risk analysis, and approximately 22% involve how organizations developed risk management plans. So other than the ones where you've got, like, you know, the snoopers and all of that kind of stuff, or somebody did such and such, it was like an individual case, that goes back to they don't do a risk analysis and don't have a risk management plan.
Mm-hmm.
And they even had somebody they interviewed that said they don't... They work on HIPAA compliance and doing the assessment, and they said that they really don't know whether they've done what they're supposed to do or not. So, and the guidance, of course, doesn't align with the CSF. So, you know, that they said that the CSF, and this was a good number where you can really understand, because it said, for example, of the 98 framework subcategories, the HSR toolkit, which is the one they give away, you know, for supposed to be for small providers. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm talking about? That we've talked about it before. You can download it, use it. I've downloaded it. Every time they updated it, I downloaded it again. I understand what it's doing, but most people, they're not going to understand it because this is not what they do. You know, they care for patients. They run a business. They don't do this. But it's of the 98 subcategories, that toolkit fully addresses 19.
Oh, gosh. Okay.
Many specific controls within the framework, within those 98, are not addressed in either the security assessment guidance or in its own risk management guidance. So, you know, they're a lot of them just aren't even mentioned. Now, one of the things that we've talked about over and over is that the HIPAA security rule is designed to go across all different kinds and sizes of organizations. But NIST says, so is the CSF. So we're looking at that. It's not looking, you know, well, anyway, we'll go on to that. so they, you know, we did talk about they released a crosswalk and we've looked at it and I've actually found it quite helpful when I'm looking at something in the CSF and I'm not quite sure what it's talking about. I go to the crosswalk and I go, oh, that makes more sense because I know the security rule so well. But it did nail them because they did not follow up and make sure that even when they did corrective actions, people weren't doing it. And it really talks about the fact that, you know, we talk about all the settlements and stuff and how they're much more active than they were, but they see thousands and thousands of cases that they never do anything but say, well, we got corrective action, acceptable corrective action.
Mm-hmm.
So that alone, if you show that you're trying, that's what we keep saying, show that you're trying.
Right.
You know, and they're nailing them because their audit function isn't fully going, and we talked about that. And the investigations. And then they also pointed out that they were talking about how many changes, how many complaints came in. So we're just talking complaints. We're not talking all the breach stuff. So in 2014 is where these numbers go back to, 17,779 complaints. And we know that number's gone up because it went up. It was 10,457. 12,974, and then it shoots up 5,000 more in 2014, so you know it's through the roof.
Yeah.
And they're like, statistically, you get all of these things, and you do not investigate. And yes, there's a lot of reasons you don't investigate, but hello. And then they nailed them and said, you know, you give them a, in one case, well, the point they're talking about here is, in they reviewed 94 cases that were dealt with by OCR. 12 of those cases reviewed technical assistant was not directly applicable to the complaint. So a complaint was submitted about a covered entity using easily guessed passwords to secure protected health information before emailing it to individuals. Hello. HHS closed the complaint by sending the covered entity a checklist for securing postal mail and faxes.
Not helpful.
I know. In several other cases, complaints were made about PHI being inappropriately accessed on a covered entity's website. OCR provided guidance to the entities on password protections for workstations instead of the website. So clearly, they're overwhelmed and they're just cramming stuff out of there.
Mm-hmm.
In 2015, we reviewed most of the identified actions were addressed before the cases were closed. In 13 of the 205 cases we reviewed where corrective actions were identified, the actions were not addressed before they closed the case. So they told them to do stuff, and then they never made sure they did it. They closed it with all these things outstanding. So they, one of the reports about this said that it has been called a scathing report, one of the articles that announced this. Scathing. Scathing. And this is the part where it was scathing. I mean, they're just nailing them left and right. They don't have benchmarks for performances and measurements because of their audit program has never been completed. The other big thing they hit them on is CMS and OCR don't share information, which we've told people for years, oh, don't worry about it. They're not going to tell those guys. And so if you don't have your risk analysis properly done, but you've gotten money from the incentive program, technically you have committed fraud because you said that you did a risk analysis. So if OCR finds that you didn't, they should be telling CMS that you didn't do it and to check and see if you got money.
Mm-hmm.
They're not doing that. If CNS finds out you're not doing it, they should come tell OCR, oh, by the by, they didn't do it. So they were really hitting them left and right on a lot of that stuff. And it doesn't talk about how anything, you know, they're like, there's not enough specifics. And that's what everybody says. There's not enough specifics.
Right.
Well, I see that as room for me to figure stuff out. But, you know, remember what you asked for is all I'm saying.
Specifically, because, there's not enough specifics.
Yeah, specifically, there's not enough. So when you do get more specifics and then you don't want to do those, what are you going to do?
Yeah.
That's all I'm saying.
And plus, you know, one of the things that people complain about HIPAA is also one of the things that's probably the best thing about it, which is it doesn't tell you exactly the things you have to use in order to attain compliance. Mm-hmm. You know, people complain about that, but it's actually not a bad idea to leave it open-ended.
Have a little loophole here or there you could figure out because when they get specific, and all you people that said it needs to be more specific, remember that. Just remember it when I say this is what you have to do, because everywhere it is specific, and I tell people that specifically says that, they're like, I don't like that. Okay, I know, but it's specific. So here are their final, they came up with five recommendations for executive action that they sent to the Secretary of HHS, and they said, this is to improve the effectiveness of guidance and oversight of privacy and security for health information. This is what we recommend.
First, listen to the podcast.
Yeah, there you go. Listen to Help Me with HIPAA. So they say, update security guidance for covered entities and business associates to ensure that the guidance addresses implementation of controls described in the NIST cybersecurity framework.
Okay.
So what that really means is, you know, that crosswalk you did, you need to go a little bit further, and that you really need to make these kind of match up a bit. You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
And HHS, in their responses, they agreed with that one. They said that they would start to implement it. So, hello, here we go.
Mm-hmm.
They concurred with three of these five recommendations and would take actions on them. They had two of them they had had something to say about that they wanted to evaluate. So, we'll hit that. So, they agreed with that one. So, it's coming down the pipe. Everybody, bone up on your cybersecurity framework. Number two, update technical assistance that is provided to covered entities and business associates to address technical security concerns. They said, okay, but I don't know. I mean, when you're sending how to secure postal stuff, when there's an email problem.
There's nothing to update. You just need to be a little more accurate.
Somebody needs to do it. You know, it needs to be revamped. But, you know, a lot of that happens when you got non-technical people doing this stuff. You know, that's another problem, so.
Yeah.
And then the other one that they agreed upon and said, yeah, we concur and that we will take actions to implement them is to establish performance measures for the audit program, which you knew they were going to do that anyway. So, mm-hmm. You know, where they're going to say, look, this is what we expect to see in audit. If you're below that, you're not meeting your requirements. So those are the ones they agreed to. So NIST, better technical assistance, and performance measures. So you'll know what you're supposed to be doing. And that's all things that people have been asking for. More specific, more assistance, and give me better definition of what I'm supposed to be doing. So yippee-yay-ki-yo. The other two, though, they didn't like so much. They had something to say about. Not necessarily And you know, remember, this is a scathing report where they're all over them and they're saying, yeah, okay, we get you. One of the ones they had an issue with was revise the current enforcement program to include following up on the implementation of corrective actions. Right. And so, you know, that we talk about the actual corrective action, the CAPs, mm-hmm. and we talked about those before. So they were saying, hey, we do that. When we actually do a settlement, we do that.
Right.
But cases that don't result in a settlement, we just don't have the resources to do it, is basically what they're saying.
Right.
The ones where they found that they closed the case before things were done, on those, they're saying, look, we'll go back and look at those, we admit. But we don't possibly have, we have thousands of these things where people agree to do it, and we don't have the resources. We barely have the resources to evaluate them, which we already know that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
That's why we're closing cases from 2014, you know? We haven't even closed anything big yet from more recent. I think 2014 is the latest one we saw. And they did say that on the last one that they brought up was establish and implement policies and procedures for sharing results of investigation and audits between OCR and CMS to make sure that they're seeing, you know, the right stuff. And on that one, HHS said that they noted that OCR shares information with CMS on breach reports. And so they tell them, our recommendations focus on OCR sharing information about the results of its investigations with CMS, which is not currently done. And they included in there and said, we really want you to do this. HHS is like, hey, we're already telling them breach reports. Well, you know, that's kind of public information. So they're saying, we don't care. We want you to do it more. Yeah. HHS is like, okay, yeah, well, okay, again with this. So the bottom line is they're like, you're going to have to give us more resources because we're talking about a massive amount of work that has to be done. And, you know, a lot of this other stuff, the CSF, there's been discussions about that anyway and bringing those two in alignment. Technical assistance, well, I'm sure that they kind of got egg on their face with what those findings were. We knew they were going to do the audits, but the follow-up on corrective actions, everybody better take note of, and the coordinate with CMS could become quite scary for others as well.
Yeah, I can think of a couple.
I know, really? But there you go. That's their scathing report, and it is quite interesting. But again, OCR's laid it out very clearly. We don't have resources.
Mm-hmm.
And most everything else we agreed to, we're already down that path. We understand we're going to do it. We know that. They've concurred. Yes, you're right. But these other things, without more resources, we can't do it. Which, guess what that means? What's the easiest way for them to get resources?
Fines.
Bam. Because then they can put those penalties into play and get more resources. So they're basically saying, find more people.
Yeah.
And so there you go, folks.
You create more revenue.
They're putting their backs against the wall. You know, I don't know. Here in the South, we say, anytime it's around the end of the month, you should be careful of the speed traps because they're going to get some more revenue.
Got to meet the quota.
Yeah, they didn't get their quota in, so they got to run out to those speed traps the last week of the month, get that revenue in. So I'm just saying, you got to start accepting this as part of your life, and it's not just healthcare.
Right.
It's everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
So there you have it, David. What do you think?
I think that people better pay attention, especially those people who took meaningful use money.
I know, really. So if you are in that mindset that this is some horrible government regulation that is, you know, trying to tell me how to run my business, I'm telling you as a person that does this work, I don't care what your business is. I don't store PHI. I don't do any of that, and I worry about security every freaking day, and I know you do too, David. I mean, we worry about it constantly,
mm-hmm.
and every business owner should be doing that.
Yeah, and it's only going to get worse. I mean, as much as we talk about privacy and security, and I know the internet's 20 years old, but some of the things that we're seeing now and some of the capabilities that people have are just, they're growing exponentially in their ability to get that data. And a lot of it's not, it's, some of it's because of the technology that they have available to them, but the vast majority of the problem is the fact that people aren't paying attention and people aren't trying to keep up with the security aspect of it. They're still dealing with, oh, I can still put, you know, some lame antivirus program on there and not update it for 5 years. You know,
it came on my computer.
Yeah, it's, you know, my 30-day free trial ran out a year ago. Or, you know, let people bring their personal laptops in and play on the internet, or let my kids come in and play while I'm working and get on Facebook and download program. I mean, it's just, some of the stuff is so easy and simple to combat, but people are just, they just don't want to be diligent in that area because, I guess, here we go again, it's not convenient to implement these security measures. But we're talking things that don't cost you that. They don't cost anything, no cost at all. It's just being diligent and being mindful and smart about it.
Yeah. It, you know, some of it is people just really don't understand the significance.
Yeah, it could be that as well. Yeah.
There's so many people that think their antivirus is running and they didn't pay attention to the fact they got a 30-day notice.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but these companies are doing that to them. We'll give you a free antivirus. Just charge them for 5 years or 3 years. Put it on there and activate it because they're not going to. Give me the option to turn it off if I've got some sense. You know, I don't penalize me for that.
Yeah, and that's where, you know, especially the smaller ones, but, you know, it's great to have somebody that you have that's an IT person, whether it's staffed or outsourced or whatever, that monitors that, because you, even when you have it installed, it doesn't necessarily mean it's functioning properly. We see that all the time, even with our own clients, where we have to go in and find out, why did that update break the antivirus? And we wouldn't know that if we didn't have the monitoring and reporting behind it. But that happens all the time. Or it didn't update for some reason, and it's been 2 weeks since it updated, and there's new antivirus definitions that come out every day. And so if you want to put a number on it, let's just say there's 1,000 new viruses a day and you're 2 weeks behind. It's 14,000 different viruses that you're not protected against. So you have to be diligent, either watching it or having somebody else watching it.
There's your dead air. Left you that way.
Tick tock, tick tock.
I know. Dead air is not what we're supposed to do.
Good thing it's got an editor.
But go ahead.
I was going to close it up. You tell me.
Close it up. I was going to do that too.
We'll close it up.
We're on the same page. That rarely happens. So note to self, learn about cybersecurity framework. We actually talked about it, and I guess we're going to be talking about it again sometime soon.
Yeah, we do. We need to probably hammer that quite frequently. So I'm sure with the upcoming Halloween episode, we should have some pretty good stuff around that.
Oh, no. All right, we'll see what we can come up with, because I note that you're not offering to create the Halloween episode.
I am creating.
Yeah. I swear that we're going to do an episode where David has to do all the notes. He's in charge of it. We're going to flip it around. I'm going to introduce the episode and close it. We're going to flip it and reverse it.
We'll see how that goes.
Well, I think it'll be fun. Opposite day.
Oh, there we go. Good old
the Sadie fun. Hawkins dance. Help me with him.
All right, so that's our show for today, folks. Thank you for listening. Don't forget to review us on iTunes and rate us there. We appreciate that. That gives us the ability to have others find us and listen to the show and get all this good juicy stuff that you're getting for absolutely free. All we ask for is that you give us a review. You can also share us out on your favorite social media outlet. We appreciate that as well. You can visit us at helpmewithhippa.com. If you want to, you can also leave a question right there on the homepage, and we might even feature it in a future episode. So for Donna and myself, remember, the HIPAA is not about compliance. It's about patient care.
You've been listening to the Help Me with HIPAA podcast, hosted by Donna Grendel and David Sims, the show created to help you with HIPAA. For more information or to ask us a question, visit our website at helpmewithhipaa.com. Neither Donna Grendel or David Sims are attorneys, and they do not offer binding legal advice concerning regulatory compliance. The information in this podcast should not be relied upon or construed as legal advice in any way. Consult your attorney for legal advice concerning compliance with HIPAA regulations.